Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Back with another banger episode of Mouthing Off. I'm sure this is going to be a very good one. We have frequent repeat offender Matt Sachs is here. Actor Matt Sachs is here. And so is Mari Sittner out in New York City. Mari, how are you?
I'm good. You know, we're hanging in here. Spring is finally coming. I don't know what your guys' situation was with all the snow. Did you get this last?
We
horrible.
Did not
you
get,
didn't get it.
We didn't get blasted by the snow, and it's going to be, I feel like we got our last cold snap. We got a cold snap, and I think it probably was related to your snow, but we did not suffer. We suffered enough. we're Minnesotans.
You guys suffer every winter. You suffer enough. We've had three really, really nice, mild winters. We deserve all of the suffering we got this year.
I have spoken like a true Manhattanite, a true New Yorker. Now you're becoming a New Yorker, Mari. Matt, how are you? Let's get the plugs out of the way. So you are doing And Then There Were None at Lyric Arts in Anoka, Minnesota, running through March 22nd, which is a matinee. I will be at the matinee this weekend on the 8th, if you want to put a face to a voice. I'll be there, although I'll probably be laying low. May I ask, because in the green room here, you two had started talking and Mari was saying, and I want to hear all about this, Mari, but what I don't want is spoilers.
Yeah, so, no spoilers.
And this is Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None. And if one of your colleagues wants to come on next week too, Matt, you know, it's an open invitation. We love talking with people. People who've listened to this show who are mouthing off Maxies already know who you are. Of course, you were in My Play Moderation. You originated the role of the male care, the troubled male character there to much acclaim. People really appreciated you, and I certainly do. How the heck are you, buddy?
Oh, how you doing? Good. I'm good. Yeah. You know, just it's Monday after a closing weekend, you know, and that closing of opening weekend. So, I mean, you know, the last week was tech, dress, performances in front of the, you know, staff, preview, and then opening night and the next two shows. So it was this is my first night off in I think a week or, you know, 8 days, something like that. So.
Well, of course, yeah. World War III is kicking off here in the background as well. This is the beginning of March 2026. So you probably got to ignore all of that.
Not ignore, but, you know, it was just in addition to everything that was going on with the week of work and shows and everything, that just added something to it as well. So an intense week and weekend, but a rewarding, you know, opening weekend of a show that we've been working on for a while now and ready to tackle it again with our understudy rehearsal on Wednesday. So tonight and tomorrow I have a little time, and then back at it Wednesday through Sunday of this upcoming week.
How did it go?
I think really well. You know, this is a very talented and experienced cast. And we've been working, and our director, Lee, said, you know, this show just needs an audience. Like she was saying that, you know, the night before our preview. And I think she was right. I think we knocked some things around in the preview and it went as good as it could go. And then we were ready opening night and have a strong opening weekend for the show.
Very good. How long were rehearsals?
Oh boy. I want to say they started right as the new year started. So about like starting like that first week of January. And they were an interesting schedule because Lee, our director, was also working with a company I was familiar with out in Los Angeles, Circle X. And so she was traveling between us and there, working on some of their new stuff that they have working, opening. They had something open this weekend, I believe, as well, as I saw on American Theater on their social media and on Circle X's social media. So she was really busy. So we'd have like 3 days of rehearsal, 3 or 4 days, and then we'd have 3 or 4 days off, and then we'd have 3 days on and 3 days off. And then it started locking down into being like, 5, 6 days of a week of rehearsal as we moved along. So it was an interesting process that way.
Well, that commute to MSP and then LA makes the drive out to Anoka seem like child's play. Although in traffic, that can be pretty gnarly. Tell me, so you've been busy, Matt. You've been busy going back and forth, and congratulations on opening weekend. Everybody go and get tickets. Go to the show. Always go to the show. Everything is at lyricarts.org. I'm gonna read the copy. Okay,
All
don't hold
right.
it against me. All right.
Not at all.
And Then There Were None, February 27th through March 22nd, 2026, by Agatha Christie. I want to talk about Agatha Christie too. I don't know hardly anything about her. Directed by Lee Hanna Conrad's, 10 strangers are lured to a secluded island, each with a dark secret. One by one, they begin to die, trapped with no way to escape and suspicion mounting. The guests must unravel the mystery before it's too late. But who is the killer and will anyone survive? Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None is the world's best-selling mystery novel, adapted into a gripping stage play that has captivated audiences for decades. Packed with suspense, twists, and a shocking finale, this thrilling whodunit will keep you on the edge of your seat. And it's showtimes are at 7:30, except for the Sunday matinees, running Wednesday through Sunday. Go to Lyric Arts, make the drive to Anoka, come and hang out with us, and go see Matt Sachs, one of the better actors here, a real journeyman, a real master actor here in the Twin Cities,
Thank you.
who says yes to practically everything. And that is a very good, I'm teasing, but that is a very good quality. You want, as a director, as a playwright, you want actors who are yes-sayers, not yes men and women, right? You don't
Right.
want puppets, right?
Right. They're not
But you
human
want,
props, as like
right,
I heard a director refer to them.
props that eat.
Yeah.
Props that eat, yeah, expensive props. No, that is a joke and a bad one. But we love our actors, don't we, people? Mari, do you have anything you wanna pepper Matt with here?
Oh, please.
Well, I mean, looking at the show, I was like, oh my God. And then there were none. That's such a big cast. There's 10 actors in the show. It, like, I feel like we've had you on for some shows where you've been in a bigger ensemble, but is this the biggest play that you've been in like a while? Because 10 actors in a play is pretty hefty.
That's a good question. I think this is a smaller cast than Hecuba with Pangaea in 2024, because that was a large cast
Yeah, that's
that
the
did
one
a
I was
lot of,
remembering.
yeah, that was a large cast with a lot of group ensemble and work involved in that. The entire cast on stage, the entire show from beginning to end. I think that had, I want to say that had like 7 people on each side of the stage, so like 14, cast of 14 maybe. But you're right, like this is a good size cast. Technically, like 11, because there's the guy who brings us to the island. Fred Narricot, played by the very talented Michael
Jeffrey
Quadrazi.
Epstein.
Oh, please.
I'm
Please,
kidding.
no.
I
This is
spoke
the
over you.
updated version,
So it's
the
11. Yeah,
modern
right.
one.
Yeah, this is the modern adaptation. So no, so this is 11 actors in this.
Yeah, Narricot is the guy who brings us to the island, and then the 10, if you're familiar with the story, and this is not a spoiler, it takes place on an island that's called Soldier Island, and they're the 10 people invited to this house, as the synopsis that you read or the intro to the play you read says. These 10 strangers are brought to this island, and they're the 10 little soldiers. And the poem, the play uses a old poem about 10 little soldiers slowly being eliminated until the end of the poem, which gives the title of its play, and then there were none. So a cast of 10, yes. 10 victims or 10 people to be dealt with by the person who's invited them to the island.
Yeah, islands are very interesting, sort of conceptually, right? I mean, we think about our favorite movie, Matt, Jaws,
Yes.
right? Yeah.
Yes.
What is what's that? Brody says it's only an island if you look at it from the ocean.
Yes, it's only an island if you look at it from the ocean. And there's always something about being isolated. Isolation is a very, intriguing, dramatic premise. You're all on your own. You can't get away. There's no access to getting help. It
Right. And
creates drama inherently.
go on, Maureen.
Well, it's just such a, yeah, it's such a great, like, dramatic foundation for a play. I was watching the other day the greatest episode of Mad Men, The Suitcase, that
Yes.
basically all takes place in that one room. And I was thinking about, I don't know if you heard this when you've taken acting classes, scene study classes, but the question you want to constantly ask yourself is, why don't you leave? Why don't they leave? And so putting it on an island is kind of perfect, because what are you going to do? Jump in the ocean? It's England, it's cold.
Yeah, I mean, like the script does a good job of explaining, like, there is no way off this island due to lack of a boat, due to the water. You know, it's too far to swim. There's just no way to really. It's in 1940, the setting is 1940, 42, 43. So there's no plane that's going to come and land on it and take people off it. There's no telephone, to call for help. So you're stuck. You're isolated.
Yeah,
You cannot escape.
it's sort of such an evergreen dramatic device. You could you people will be using it forever. My mind immediately goes as it's not corny, but as far afield as it is Battlestar Galactica. They're trapped in this on this ship in space. The Earth has been destroyed, and they are all wondering who's the Cylon, right?
Sure.
Who's it's just the same concept. Or Lifeboat, the Hitchcock movie
Yeah.
Lifeboat, same similar concept. It's just going to keep
Yeah.
coming back and back because it's so good, it's so juicy.
It's fascinated people, I think, forever. The idea of being stranded on an island and no escape. You're going back to Robinson Crusoe, written in the, I want to say, late 1600s, early 1700s, Treasure Island. It's such, they're. You, there's a million great stories about people being trapped with no escape and having to figure out how to survive. So it is inherently dramatic, and people, I think, will find ways to create stories that use it because it is so amazing that way. And what Mari cited, the suitcase, which is the single best single episode of Mad Men, which is maybe my favorite dramatic TV series. Don and Peggy go out to that diner once. But then they come and they also go to a bar real quickly. But then when they're in the building in the office of Sterling Cooper Draper Price, they are stuck there,
Well, they
choosing to
could
work,
leave,
and
but
they could leave, but
they're not gonna leave. And there is that psychological element in And Then There Were None. If you're familiar, obviously physically they're trapped, but there's another reason that they're there, and you have to see the show to see what that is.
yeah. I don't think it spoils anything to say like these people have been accused of getting away with killing people. That doesn't, I
You
think,
can say
spoil
it.
it.
I
I don't
have
think it
trauma
spoils
around
it.
spoiling this.
Yeah, I don't want to. Obviously, we're not going to spoil it, but I think these people who have been brought to this island, they've been accused of these crimes, and so that's they're stuck amongst strangers. None of them know each other. They're completely unknown to each other for the most part. 99% wise, I would say. So, imagine being in a scary situation with people you know nothing about. And that adds to the drama of it and everything. So it's an incredibly tense situation. And then you pile on the stress of that onto the characters and the situation they're in and the isolation. And it just builds and builds the drama. And it really is masterfully crafted that way. And it's inspired people forever.
Had you read the book before you auditioned or got the role? Like, were you familiar with the whole story or just the kind of the concept?
I'd read the novel multiple times over the years, and I've also seen it's it it, it there have been film versions of it going back to like within 5 years of the book, 5, 6 years of the book being written. So there have been many adaptations of it, which I'd seen multiple versions of the adaptations of it. I'd seen the play at Theater in the Round. I want to say like 12 years ago, maybe even longer. I'm not sure, but I was very familiar with it, and you know, that was why I was excited to audition for it, because I knew there were lots of intriguing characters. You can't go wrong. These are all interesting people that are brought to this island. There's not, it's a strong ensemble piece, and it has fascinating characters. Every single character has something interesting to do, an interesting moment, a fascinating, intense scene. There's nothing slacking in it. It's electrifying in a lot of ways.
Interesting. How closely does the stage adaptation, again, without spoilers, cleave to the novel?
I'd say pretty accurately. You know, this is Christie adapted her own novel for this play. She did it herself. So the script we're doing is by Agatha Christie. She took her novel and adapted it for the stage herself. About, I want to say about like 4 years after the book came out in 39, she adapted it for the stage
Oh,
herself.
yeah. I could see, and of course, being set against the backdrop of the war, too. You could see why, you know, death and feeling trapped, you know, island Europe,
I think it
island.
spoke to those audiences, especially who came to see it in 43 when it premiered in the West End or in London, wherever it was. I can see how audiences in a blitzed London could be drawn to seeing these people.
I mean, they're acutely aware that their nations, their country is an island. They're very aware of that. So I'm sure that was. So I'm going to read a little of this. Just this is just her Wikipedia. I do another podcast called Art of Darkness at artofdarkpod.com. Mari, we got to get you on for a dark room. Matt's coming on later this month. Who are we talking about on Art of Darkness later
Oh,
this month?
I believe Gore Vidal, who.
See, we haven't covered Gore Vidal yet.
Yes.
So we'll have to we'll go out of order. That'll be fine. I don't mind that at all. That's exciting. So that'll be a lot of fun. Mari, I'm going to send you the booking link for that too. You got to come on, pick somebody you want to talk about. You want to talk about Amy Winehouse
Oh, God, sure.
later this year? Wouldn't
That's
that
a
be
tough
fun?
one.
That would, no, wait, you don't have to do an episode on her. We'll do the episode, and then you just come on for 90 minutes
I just
and
meant
chat with
tough,
us
like
about it.
woof,
Yeah,
heavy.
no. Yeah, Woof is right. Well, next year we're going to do the 27 Club summer. So we're going to do 5 27 Club episodes. I'm going to do one. We're going to have three guest co-hosts cover, and then we're going to have it'll probably be Jack from the Book Club from Hell, Brad Kelly again, and then Abby again, and then Matt's going to do one. We figured because we do 12 or 13 episodes a year, we figured we probably don't want to do, you know, a dozen people who died at 27. Even though it's a theme for the summer is the point, because it's going to be 2027. I just sent the booking link. Anyway, Matt, I'm looking forward to that, and maybe we'll leave a few minutes at the end to talk about your Gore Vidal connection, because you actually met the man. But let's not go too far afield here. That other show's at artofdarkpod.com. We do biographical profiles of dead artists. All right. So yeah, Agatha Christie. Let me find this. A Dame Agatha Mary Clarissa Mallowan, Lady Mallowan, usually known by her first married name, Agatha Christie, that rolls off the tongue a little more easily, doesn't it? Was an English author known for her 66 detective novels and 14 short, prolific short story collections, particularly those revolving around fictional detectives, Hercule Poirot, did I say it right?
Yeah,
And Miss.
Hercule Poirot.
Hercule Poirot, Hercule, you don't hear that name much anymore. And Miss Marple. She is widely regarded as one of the greatest writers, particularly in the mystery genre. A writer during the golden age of detective fiction, Christie has been called the Queen of Crime, a nickname now trademarked by her estate, or the Queen of Mystery. She wrote the world's longest running play, the murder mystery, The Mousetrap, which has been performed in the West End of London since 1952. And I remember being in London and seeing that, you know, it's still open. She also wrote six novels under the pseudonym Mary Westmacott in 1971. I'm getting ready to do Tolkien on the other pod. So I'm sort of prepping my, I'm trying to get Worcestershire. So I'm trying to get my names right. Warwick. I'm pretty good at it, having spent a lot of time in the UK. Our French is horrible on that show. So anyway, Tolkien's going to be great. What a life. In 1971, I'm almost done. She was made a dame, which means a different thing in American mysteries, right? By Queen Elizabeth II for her contributions to literature. She is the best-selling fiction writer of all time, her novels having sold more than 2 billion copies. Whoa. We might have to cover her next year.
And she's
That
an
is
interesting person.
crazy.
No, incredible accomplishments. And then There Were None was her biggest success. It's her best standalone novel. It's not a Poirot mystery, it's not a Miss Marple mystery. It stands alone by itself as a singular novel. There's no, it's a thriller, it's a mystery without a real detective figure in the sense of it.
You don't need to know any lore to jump into,
Nothing.
right?
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's a
Well, that's
great,
perfect for something about an island, right? The
yeah, it's a
metaphor
great intro
continues.
to, yeah, it's a great intro to anyone who is not familiar with her work. I think that would, if it's something, if you're interested in murder mysteries, and I don't know many people these days who aren't at least interested in some way, form of it or another, this is the first, this is the great one. This is one set the standard. It's inspired. Obviously its own films based on it in and of itself, but it also has inspired things like Clue and Murder by Death and other anything where people are stranded or stuck in a house or in a place that they can't escape, and there's a suspicion of crime and death going on. It's inspired by And Then There Were None. It's a true inspirational thriller that has fascinated people for now on going almost on 100 years.
And it's evergreen, right? Death fascinates us all. I mean, I've said for a long time the two interesting things are sex and death. It's how we
Sure.
got here. It's how we're going out. We're all going out the same way, finally. There's going to be some variations, but it's ultimately we all go out. We just lived through this crazy pandemic. Whatever you think about it and the politics, put all that aside. There was this sort of like specter of death was moving across the land. Is this, am I going to kill grandma?
Oh no.
No, but I mean, and it's not that far to pull to, that to stretch that metaphor away from maybe World War II to start thinking about what we've all been through of late. Matt, when you're rehearsing a play like this, contra maybe like a new play, like my, the one we did together, what's, it's very different. I mean, doing a contemporary two-hander or doing something with a little more history that's established with a much bigger cast. How would you describe the difference there?
Oh, that's a great question. It, some of it goes back to Mari's question about, having been familiar with the novel and seeing, multiple film versions of it. I wanted to, in my case, intentionally, throw that stuff out that I'd seen before, and not let that influence my work and performance on it. And then it's an ensemble piece. It's a true ensemble piece. So there's interaction between everybody. I think at least once I talk with every single other person in the cast, and back and forth with everybody. So you kind of put yourself in like, I'm part of an ensemble. It's a piece that's established and that people maybe have seen before, but you want to make your own performance unique. You're not creating a character in the sense of like, in moderation, I was creating he from what you put on the page, and you and I would discuss things and I would experiment. You're still that, there's still that element of, trying different line readings and different motivations in rehearsal, but you're playing a character that has been around for, the novel came out in 39, so almost 100 years. And you're trying different things that fit how the show and the director want it to fit as a whole. So it's a different kind of work,
Do you go out of your way to read about performances, to read notices, to maybe even look up, at other adaptations of it, or do you try to go in a little colder? Because I could see advantages to doing both. I don't think either is necessarily better. It's probably more about your own style. How do you approach that?
Yeah, it's a, I think it does depend on the performer. For me, I had seen two or three versions of it, and I knew, you know, I tried to kind of push those away from me, you know, and not like, you know, completely turn my back on them, but at the same time, try and give my own unique perspective to the character. I did go back and reread the novel a couple times before we started rehearsals. Because I wanted to refresh my memory from the insights that she gives. Because there's things that you can do in a novel, obviously, that you can't do in a play. The internal thought mechanisms and what people are thinking inside themselves that aren't in the script, spoken out loud in the text of our script for the play. So I did go back and reread the novel, but I didn't go back and like, rewatch the film versions. I did watch one of our cast members, Emily. She sent out a video where a guy ranked all the versions of And Then There Were None that he'd seen and did kind of like an NCAA tournament bracket of comparing them, you know, to each other and what he liked in one and what he didn't like in another and what worked well, you know, setting wise, performances. He did all sorts of categories, and most of us in the cast, I think, watched that because it was just interesting to see what he thought and what his thoughts were on different people's performances and interpretations of the characters, the setting, how it progressed, what they changed from the novel to adapt for film and television, and what they kept. So I think we all watched that, and I found that insightful for myself and the work.
What was the best one, according to this guy?
Oh, I think he, I can't remember. I'm gonna guess that I think he put the 70, I want to say 72 version at number one, but maybe I think he ranked that one number one, and maybe there was a tie between the 2015 BBC version and the original 45, 1945, the first ever one. I want to say that's right, but I'm not 100% sure. But I can find that video and send it to you, Mari, so you
Yeah,
can
I
see
want
what
to
he did.
know because I haven't seen any of the movie adaptations at all. We just reread the book in 7th grade, and that was my experience with it.
Yeah. You know, I'd watched a few of them, but I hadn't seen all the ones that he'd seen. I'd seen, I think I'd seen the three that he put in the top three. I know I saw the 45 original, the 2015 BBC miniseries, which was like a three-part miniseries that they did, and the seven again, like I think I want to say 72 version of it, but I might be like off. I'm not 100% sure. But yeah. Those were the versions that he ranked every single one. He used every he didn't throw in things like there's a Family Guy episode that's kind of built around the structure of it. He didn't put Clue in there because Clue is not a straight up adaptation. I think he only did straight up. I think one was not a straight up adaptation, but everything else was a straight up adaptation of it. So it was an interesting video to watch. So I did that, but I did not go back and rewatch any of the
Sure.
film versions of it.
I've got a little more about Christie, which I think is fascinating. Is it all right if I read a few more things?
Sure.
Yeah, I love this stuff. I really love biography. In 1946, Christie said of herself, "My chief dislikes are crowds, loud noises, gramophones, and cinema." I'm sure today she'd say, "and podcasts." "I dislike the taste of alcohol and do not like smoking. I do like sun, sea, flowers, traveling, strange foods, sports, concerts, theaters, pianos, and doing embroidery." Christie was a lifelong, quietly devout member of the C of E, the Church of England, attended church regularly, and kept her mother's copy of The Imitation of Christ by her bedside, which is an incredible book. I think the second most popular sort of over time Christian book of it's like mystical meditation on Christ and Christianity by a man named Thomas Kempis. After her divorce, she stopped taking the sacrament of communion. Of course, she had a divorce. She established a trust for children in 1969. After her death, a charitable memorial fund was set up to help two causes that she favored: old people and young children. Her obituary in the Times noted that she never cared much for the cinema or for wireless and television. Further, Dame Agatha's private pleasures were gardening. She won local prizes for horticulture and buying furniture for her various houses. She was a shy person. She disliked public appearances, but she was friendly and sharp-witted to meet. By inclination as well as breeding, she belonged to the English upper middle class. She wrote about and for people like herself. That was an essential part of her charm. Some other interesting stuff about her estate. I might read a little more of that as we proceed here. So now going into week two here, Matt, what are you doing in the interim to sort of stay frosty and to be ready for, I suppose, Wednesday night?
Oh, that's a great question. I took a little bit of a break after our matinee on Sunday. And today I've been working my regular day job. You know, I haven't looked at my script today yet, but I'll probably review it tonight, you know, before I go to sleep. And I'll definitely review it tomorrow before Wednesday. And then Wednesday we're doing, like I said, our put in understudy rehearsal. So it'll be an interesting experience because in all my career, you know, I've gone to one rehearsal as an understudy and I've never been in a full run with the understudies where they'll swap in and out with us and we'll be on stage with them tomorrow or Wednesday night. So it'll be an interesting experience. We've got talented people who are our understudies and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do and working with them on this rehearsal on Wednesday. We had an understudy already step in on Sunday, just yesterday for our first Sunday matinee, Sarah Furness understudying multiple roles. She stepped in for our Mrs. Rogers and she was terrific. So it's great. You know, I'm excited to do this it's always exciting to do new things. So I'm looking forward to this Wednesday rehearsal to help sharpen everything up for when we have an audience again on Thursday.
Well, so you're going to, so Wednesday night is understudy night.
Yeah, they're gonna. It's a rehearsal this Wednesday night with like our understudies getting to be on stage and do the parts that they've been understudying, and so they'll do like we'll do like maybe like almost I think we're gonna do like maybe two runs or something like that or go you know we'll do a scene rewind and an understudy will step in because some of them are doing more than one part. So
jeez,
yeah. So
I can't even imagine. I mean. I suppose maybe because there are so many actors, the parts, you know, it's not like playing Hamlet, right? But still, I mean, that's a lot. It's a lot to memorize. You got to be a real pro to do that.
Yeah. No, it's very, yeah. I mean, the folks who are understudying us are talented folk. Like we, you know, and two of them are in our cast already. Like Michael Quadrazzi, who is our friend Narricot, he's understudying Rogers, the butler character in the show. And, but he's there every night anyway, cause he's doing the guy who brings us to the island, Fred. And then, Drew Rayhoot, who plays, Anthony Marston. He's also understudying the part of, Philip Lombard, who's kind of an adventurer as he's described by other characters in the show, a young adventurer. And that's played by Brendan Veerman, who's fantastic. So Drew is really great as Anthony Marston every night in the show. And I've seen him in rehearsal. He's worked as Lombard already in a couple rehearsals. And it's interesting to see what he brings to the character.
I am so bad with names. So I could never direct or even work on a play like this because I'd probably just start calling everybody by the characters they play. you know, and just settle on that. You'd have to accept it if I was directing, I suppose. So maybe I would direct something like this. Again, we're talking with the very talented Matt Sachs here on Mouthing Off. We are Bad Mouth Theater Company. You can find us at badmouthtc.com. You might be listening to this on Spotify. Some nailed it. Or iTunes, or you might be listening to it on 94.1 Frogtown Radio. That's 94.1 FM, of course, here in beautiful St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm looking at And Then There Were None, running through March 22nd, 2026 at Lyric Arts, lyricarts.org. That is in beautiful, historic Anoka, Minnesota. Is this downtown? I can't say I've ever been to this theater, Matt.
Oh, great question. Yeah. Yeah. And Lyric Arts is right on Main Street in Anoka. So if you're coming, if you say you're coming from the cities and you take the 169 North, you take it straight into Anoka, and then you'd see a sign that says Main Street. You'd turn right on Main Street, and then you'll see Lyric Arts kind of at the end of Main Street in a way, like before it goes over into the highway into Coon Rapids. On Main Street in Anoka, Lyric Arts right there with a big marquee and its own parking lot. Lyric Arts in Anoka right on Main Street. So it's right in the heart of Anoka, of downtown Anoka.
Old Main Street in Anoka. Fun fact. Nobody asked, but fun fact. The Anoka Hennepin School District is the largest in Minnesota. It serves approximately 37 to 38,000 pre-K through 12 students. Located in the northern suburbs of the Twin Cities, it operates 24 elementary schools, 6 middle schools, and 5 high schools. The district is experiencing growth in areas like Blaine and Dayton, driving ongoing infrastructure expansion. That is just a fun fact. it's interesting to think about it. It's just massive. 38, can you imagine every day for
no.
8-9 months out of the year? Like, that superintendent's earning his money. Those principals are earning their money. That's a lot. It's a lot of responsibility. So shout out to all the great public educators in the state of Minnesota and the Anoka Hennepin School District. Matt Sachs is in your territory right now doing, and then there were Agatha Christie's, and then there were none. And you are very fortunate to have him, and you should buy a ticket. I don't think the tickets are that prohibitive. They're what, some $40, $50. Get on out there. Have a great time. Drag your husband along. Take your old lady. She'll thank you. She will. We're gonna return to old lady maxing. Matt, I like that term. We're gonna talk like bikers. Well, you can take your grandma too. You know, if you're a broccoli headed Zoomer, you can take your Grammy.
Yeah, you're just giving Sons of Anarchy vibes with the old lady.
Did you ever see The Bike Riders? Did you see that movie?
I didn't see that. But I was a huge Sons of Anarchy fan. So watch that.
The Bike Riders with.
I heard it was good.
It's really good. Mari, did you hear about this? Or did you see it? It's based.
Oh, is this the new one? I saw ads for it and didn't see it.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. It's a very, this is our show. We can talk about whatever. It's got, what is his name? Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, Michael Shannon. It's based on a book of photographs in this, like, photojournalism that this guy did in, I think, the 60s, where he followed, like, outlaw motorcycle gangs all throughout the Midwest, particularly Chicago. It's a real Midwestern film. It actually captures, it like looks like the Midwest still looked into the 90s. Now we got all these Facebook apartments in places like Minneapolis, but you can still find those little pockets. You know, there's another movie that's set in the Twin Cities. Well, this wasn't set in the Twin Cities, The Bike Riders, but go watch it. It's really cool. It's not a perfect film, you know, but it's a very cool film. Okay. And those guys had old ladies, I guess is what I'm saying. The other one that people sleep on is the Bukowski adaptation that was shot in the Twin Cities. A lot of it was shot in St. Paul. There's actually a jump cut where he's in Minneapolis, if you know Minneapolis, but they jump cut right to St. Paul, and you're like, he didn't walk there. I get, you know, the power of cinema, right? But it's called Factotum. Are you familiar with any of that, Matt?
I heard of Factotum because I've met people who remember when it was shot here.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a French Norwegian dark comedy drama film written and directed by Bent Hammer, adapted from the 75 novel of the same name by Charles Bukowski. It stars Matt Dillon. That's a good, decent, solid, and set in the Twin Cities. There you go.
I'd have to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun. All right. Do you have anything else coming up after And Then There Were None, Matt?
Oh, well, I've been remiss in saying, like, my character in And Then There Were None is Dr. Armstrong. I should say, like, you know, what character am I playing?
Yeah,
People who know the novel are wondering, what, this guy hasn't said what character he's playing in it. I'm playing Dr. Armstrong in And Then There Were None. Again, there are 10 characters, 11 counting the guy who brings us to the island. So you'll learn our names quick enough if you're watching the show. But yeah, I'm playing Dr. Armstrong in it. This runs, like I said, through March 22nd. I do have stuff lined up. There's going to be some improv shows with my improv group, Last Action Movie. We're going to be performing in April at Bumbling Fool's Meadery. That's a real cool place. You know, it's a meadery, not a winery or a brewery or a, I don't even, you know,
distillery.
Distillery.
That's it's what you're looking for.
Yeah, distillery. It's a meadery. So very cool space. And then, of course, yeah, I've been on the show before with my friends from Dark Pony Productions, like Matt Kelly. And we've got Drinking Game Minnesota shows going on at both Bryant Lake Bowl and at The Hive. So you can always find a Drinking Game Minnesota. So there'll be those coming up. I'm not in some of those Drinking Game Minnesota shows, but I always want to make sure I give a shout out. And, of course, I am Dark Pony also means our podcast, the Dark Pony Radio Show that Kevin has written for and that we appeared on, and the two-parter, The Basilisk. We've got a series. This whole season is devoted to one storyline, Vedma, written by Corey Bowe and Matt Kelly, and new episodes of that coming out on a monthly basis. So I'm going to be recording, I think, the final two episodes in the next month. So it's a great, great storyline that I think people will really dig. So, got all that coming up. My focus though right now is on getting through the rest of this, run of And Then There Were None. Cause it takes a lot of concentration for this show, because again, what Mari said, big cast on stage, conversation going back and forth between 10 people. Sometimes you gotta know your lines and have your head on a swivel and be present and in the moment so that you're always connecting and listening and working with everybody and telling the story. So that's my focus right now. And that's why I'm going to make sure I review my script tonight and tomorrow before Wednesday.
Yeah. Do you do anything special in terms of, like, I'm going to say it, self-care? Diet during runs, before runs? Do you have a routine like these Olympic athletes? They're not getting McDonald's and pounding a six pack every night before the games, except for the people who curl, I suppose. I love, or the hockey players for that matter.
Snowboarders.
Yeah. Or the snowboard. Well, the snowboarders are all on edibles. Who knows? Actually, I think the drug testing is probably pretty strict.
Yeah. I was going to say, they probably can't do edibles before an event.
Probably for a long time. Listen, let me just say real quick. I got to see the Wild welcome back the Olympians. They welcomed them all back. The Germans, the Swedes, and then of course the Americans, Quinn Hughes. And then we had, Matt Boldy, who got the first goal against the Canadians. I've heard MAID numbers have shot up in Canada since the Canadian healthcare is taking off. That was very cool. Matt, we got to go to a Wild game. That was against your Blues, right?
It was yesterday. Yeah, yes.
You got us at the end there. It was a good one.
Yeah. They needed a win. They're terrible. But anyway.
So follow up on the question though. So do you have a routine? Do you have, like, okay, a week before rehearsals, I do this, you know, in rehearsals, or is it more just, ooh, you just go with the flow?
Oh, that's a good question. During rehearsals, I don't really have a strict routine. Ever since like college, I'm a kind of person who I don't like to eat before I'm going to go to rehearsal. And especially before performances, I just want to feel like light on my feet. I don't want to feel weighed down. So when I was younger, I would give myself like a 5 to 6 hour window of not eating before a rehearsal and a performance. Now it's more like about 3 or so. But then instead, I make sure I hydrate before I go and drink some water. Or if I'm on stage doing a voice, you know, I'll sip a little something warm while I'm there. I like to, you know, shower and make sure I'm cleaned up and everything. I brush my teeth at the theater before, you know, getting into costume, because I want to make sure my breath is good for my fellow cast members and be courteous and think about that sort of thing. So I always brush my teeth.
This is all why I podcast from home. Nobody has any idea what's going on here right now. It ain't good.
That for sure. I do that. You know, you get into little rituals if you're an actor before a show, things that make you feel comfortable. Like I like to, on my drive, the drive to Anoka, I listened to my script. You know, I use the Line Learner app. So before, as I'm driving to Anoka, I listen to the script, which I've recorded. You know, I recorded my own lines and I recorded other people's lines, my cues. I like to read in this play. Recording the lines in my Line Learner app was an interesting challenge because I tried to, like, especially in, again, those big group scenes where there's 10 people on stage, you know, I would read like four or five different characters, you know, to build up to where my lines were. And then I'd read my lines. Sometimes I edited it a little bit, you know, I wouldn't read the whole, you know, I'd skip a couple pages. If I wasn't on two or three pages, I'd skip ahead to my page and then start reading like about four or five lines ahead of my line. But I wanted to make sure I did that sort of stuff and included other dialogue aside from my own, not just my lines or just the cue lines and my lines, because I wanted to make sure I was listening and aware and knowing, okay, my stuff's coming up. So I got to be ready and be prepared. And at the same time, stay in the moment and listen to the people who are talking on stage. So I listened to all the script as much as I can in the car on my drive to Anoka before I get to the theater. And I feel like that really helps.
That is a very, very cool idea. Is that very common among actors, or is this a Matt Sachs innovation?
I think in recent years with these development of line of apps where you can record your lines and listen to them played back, and you can even share them across, you know, if another actor has the app, you know, you can share their line readings and your line readings and put them together. I think it's become a new thing. I think there's other apps. I use Line Learner. I know there's other ones out there. I'm at a loss for what they're called, but I use Line Learner. And it's something I've been doing for a long time now. I've got about like 30, I want to say like maybe like 18 scripts in my Line Learner app of shows that I've done, you know, moderations in there for sure. All of it, because it was just me and Amanda, two people. So I read every single one of the lines in of the play into the script, into the app. So I read the entire play into the app so that it was her and me together. But I've got about 18 scripts in my Line Learner app, and it's something I've made part of my practice to record all the lines and listen to them. And sometimes I vary it up. Sometimes I listen to all of it. Sometimes I listen to my lines first, just my lines first, and then I'll listen to the cues and the lines together. Sometimes I'll play just the cues and say my lines out loud. Sometimes I'll play both at the same time. But it has definitely become part of my habit and my work in my craft to like use this app to listen, to record all my lines and play them back. I always listen to them and nothing but them when I'm driving to rehearsal or to the performances. And in this case, I waited till after our first week of rehearsal so I could hear how other actors were saying their lines before I recorded mine and recorded the readings that I was doing so I could get them. They've obviously changed since then in some ways, but for the most part, it's just good to hear it and get it in my ear audibly. So it's become a big part of my work.
That's a great idea. I mean, that was one of the biggest challenges that I had, you know, when I was acting. I mean, I'm not a natural talent at acting, but I forced myself to do it because I think as a playwright, you have to, you know, even just once, just to know what the hell you're up against.
Sure. Now, yeah. I think there's lots of naturally talented actors, I think, who don't have like the strongest, you know, memorization is a different skill from performing and acting. Mm-hmm. You have to learn what works best for you when it comes to memorizing lines. So in my case, I go to a library, I sit in a private study room, I write out in cursive the cue lines for me, and then I write my lines in print. And then I write just my lines in print. And then I write just the first letter of every word in my lines out. And then I record them in the app. And I do this app recording and listen to it.
I feel that really helps. Yeah. Have you ever written written your lines as a way to sort of ingrain them? Or is it
more that's
hearing? Yeah.
I take the script into a study room at a library and I write there the cue lines in script, and then I write my lines, I print them, and then I'll write after I've done that, I'll give it like a couple days and work on it in rehearsal, you know, and hear it and work on it in rehearsal. Then I'll go and just write my lines in either sometimes in script, but sometimes printing it again. And then if I have time, I'll write just the first letter of every word of my line. So if the line is like, I can do that, I write I C D T so that I get it in my head that way.
Yeah, I was taught to do the same thing. I've always, every time I've been in a show, and the last time was a little over a year ago, I would just write out like sometimes the entire script by hand over and over and over again. It just works. I think there's nothing like it. I think if you're an actor and you're running lines with somebody that you know and it's not working, try writing it down. That's
Yeah.
always done the trick for me. And it's nice if you're on your commute. I mean, you're obviously driving, but if you're getting there any other way, you can just do it on your phone. You can just type it on your notes app. You can type the entire script on your notes app.
Yeah, I mean that's another way to do it. I find that, you know, writing it out helps me, and then listening to it again in the app, and you know, again, I use Line Learner, but there's other ones out there, and you find what works best for you. But I really think with the development of these apps and hearing the lines, it makes a big difference. I connected, there's an actress, I can't remember her name right now, and I feel so bad, but there's an actress in London. She's a British actress, and she was doing Sting's musical, The Last Ship. And she and I
Dame Judi Dench.
no.
I'm just kidding.
Sting has a musical?
Yeah, it's called The
They
Last
all
Ship.
have musicals.
Yeah, he wrote a musical called The Last Ship, and there's an actress who's in it. I want to say right now, I'll have to go on her Instagram and see, but she was on, we connected kind of on Instagram, and I saw her. She was on her Instagram. She posted, like, you know, the work of memorization, like recording her lines, and she uses Line Learner. And I said, ah, you know, I put in the comments, ah, another Line Learner person, you know, let's all, it's great to see. Let's pledge eternal friendship because we both use Line Learner. And she was like, yes. I don't know anyone else. I've never met anyone else who uses that still.
That
So,
seems like,
yes.
you know, that really seems like a wasted opportunity for them. That, I mean, not everything has to be a social media app, and a basic line learning app has a lot less legal and a lot less like complexity. But it seems like it could be a good opportunity to connect actors with one another. But in any event, who knows? Maybe they'll spin off and do something social. I'm
I don't
actually
know. Yeah.
really all about social media when you could turn it into real things, like Mari and I did, like Amanda and I did. And Mari, I've talked a lot. I've asked a lot of questions. We got maybe two or three more minutes. You want to get the last one in? Everybody go see Matt Sachs, the great Matt Sachs, a
Thank you.
real professional actor here at Lyric Arts, lyricarts.org in Anoka, Minnesota, running until March 22nd, 2026. Mari, any last pressing question for
Oh, my
Mr.
last
Sachs?
question. So pressing, so important. I can't believe we haven't addressed this. Kevin, you reminded me when you did your amazing British accent. Is Matt, are you all doing British accents? How are they treating you? How are you treating them?
100%. Yes, we're doing British accents. We have a great dialect coach, Jillian. You know, we did our run through for her. We did a run through for her. We got notes. Then we did another one for her a few weeks later, got some more notes. So yeah, we're doing the dialects. If you come to the show, you'll hear majority of us doing the standard British kind of dialect, but some of our there are the person the more, I wouldn't say lower class, but the working class people, Fred, who brings us to the island, Michael Quadrazzi, and Rogers and Mrs. Rogers, the two people who work in the house on the island, the sort of man butler, but he's not a butler exactly, but you know, he and his wife, Mrs. Rogers, who's the cook, they're working class people from Devonshire, and they are using a kind of Devonshire accent, Devonshire dialect. So their dialect's a little different from our standard British dialect of the other people who are in the show. But we have dialect coaches, and yeah, I had to go through all my script and, you know, cut out the R's and make sure I circle the T's at the end to hit those hard T's, and add an H in front of my words like what and stuff like that. So yes, dialect is a big part of it. Yeah, it's important. I think in this case for this show, this which is so British, you know, it has a British jurist in the cast. You know, there's people who are served in the British Army are two of the characters. There's a general and a captain. So it was very important to get that the dialects correct.
LyricArts.org through March 22nd, 2022. Go see And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie with Matt Sachs. LyricArts.org. It's in Anoka. I'm Kevin Kautzman. This is Mari Sittner in New York City. Matt Sachs. Are you in Minneapolis? Matt Sachs in Minneapolis. I'm in downtown, beautiful downtown, historic downtown, St. Paul, Minnesota. We're at Bad Mouth, a theater company. Go to badmouthtc.com. Bye. Who done it? Who did the podcast? We've all been accused of podcasting.